I think I have heard every joke that's told about preachers at least twice. Every single one of them. I do have a couple of favorites. One of my favorites is about the preacher who's kind of cranky and perhaps even a little discouraged. And so he takes a Sunday off from preaching. In fact, not only does he take the Sunday off from preaching, he takes a Sunday off from going to church. And he goes to the golf course instead of going to church on Sunday morning, teams up with three other guys, and they get off to a good start. He tees up on a par three, hits a beautiful shot, gets up there on the green, and sure enough, he's aced that hole. He's made a hole in one. And the three friends in his foursome, oh, they're all excited, and they're cheering him on, and he is down on that green, pounding it in tears. And they ask him what's wrong, and he says, I made a hole in one, but it's Sunday morning, and I can't tell anybody about my hole in one. Well, that's probably not a real accurate perception about preachers. When we take off on a Sunday, we don't typically go to the golf course on Sunday. We're usually worshiping somewhere. But I want to let you in on another accurate secret about preachers. Those of us who preach have a lot of things on our mind as we're anticipating having this experience with each of you on a Sunday morning. As we think in terms of sermon content, we're thinking about the overall needs of the church as a group. And perhaps we're even thinking about specific needs of individuals that we know and know well. Challenges they're facing in their life, maybe some sort of crisis or difficulty or even walking through grief. So we have to make a fundamental decision. Is this Sunday, and is my sermon going to speak primarily to the head? In other words, it's going to be one of those sermons, it's all about biblical facts. And this is what God says, this is what's clearly wrong, and this is what's clearly right. It's going to speak to the head. These are the biblical facts, and that seems like a pretty good idea because we're living in a culture where boundaries don't exist. And so knowing what God expects and being reminded of what God expects, I think that's pretty important, is it not? Or perhaps we'll decide, no, I really feel like my message this week needs to speak not primarily to the head, but primarily to the heart. When you think about the parable of the prodigal son in Luke chapter 15, the image of that Jewish father running to his son, if that doesn't speak to your heart, I'm not sure what can. And I think of the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10. And here's this guy in the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. He's beaten and left for dead, and he's been robbed too. He's been the victim of a violent crime, and here comes this Samaritan who actually helps the guy. How can that not move your heart? And if you read the Psalms carefully, every possible emotion is articulated so well in the Psalms. I want to give you some forewarning this morning. What I'm going to say this morning is going to speak primarily to the head and not to the heart. And I want to further clarify by saying what I'm going to say this morning is not what I would say to someone who is experiencing a personal crisis in their life, or someone who's grieving a loss, or someone who's even struggling with one of their children. They're going through some kind of struggle with one of their kids. This is not what I would say to them. Instead, in that context, I would listen with my heart, and I would speak with my heart. So today we're gonna focus primarily on the head. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. I'm going to read it twice. We're going to have a little interesting exercise this morning. Short text, powerful text. James chapter 1, 2 through 4. So in this first reading, listen primarily with your head. Think about the facts of the passage. What facts is he getting across in this particular passage? Listen with your head to James chapter 1, 2 through 4. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. How does that speak to your head? I know my immediate response was, I want to raise my hand and say, yes, I want to. I want to have the ability to persevere, and furthermore, yes, I want to be mature and complete. I want to be a mature Christian, so I want to raise my hand and say, yes, I want to. That's my head response to James 1, 2 through 4. Okay, here's the second go-around. Let's read it again. And this time, listen primarily with your heart. It's a passage talking about trials, difficulties in life, hurdles to overcome, things that are complex, and in many cases, very, very painful. How does it speak to the heart? Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. When I read it earlier this week, in speaking to my heart, names and faces came to mind. I think of friends who are facing unspeakable grief at this very moment. I think of people who have all kinds of difficulties and complexities going on in their life. Names and faces just went right through. And this text spoke to my heart as I think about these individuals doing everything they know how to persevere just in the manner that's described right here in this passage. Now let's just imagine, if we're going to use our imagination for just a moment, let's just imagine that you read this passage, James 1, 2 through 4, when you are in a particularly difficult chapter in life. Not much doubt that you're probably going to hear the message with the heart. I think back to 2012. That was a difficult year for me. From April the 15th till July the 11th, less than 90 days, I lost three very close friends. Two friends that were my age I had grown up with who died before their 50th birthday. And then my close mentor and professor at Abilene Christian passed away on July the 11th that year. Three people I was close to in less than 90 days. So I think back to reading this passage, I think back to what I was thinking, and perhaps more importantly, what I was feeling. And I remember thinking at the time, it just keeps coming. It won't stop. I felt like I was being bombarded with loss. It wasn't one loss, it was three significant losses. So I read this passage today and I look at that experience. That's been over 10 years ago now. And I view it through a much different lens than I did 10 years ago and realize 10 years have passed and I believe I learned some things from those experiences. I do believe I grew and I do believe I experienced perseverance. That the experience of profound loss changed me and changed me for the better. And I do believe that is exactly what he is attempting to convey in this section of James. So he uses an interesting word, test. In the original language, test can mean to tempt, like a real temptation, you are tempted by something, but it can also mean test in the sense that it's challenging the very integrity of your faith. Another phrase that's pretty descriptive is the term suggests an unwelcome and unanticipated experience. Well, that's pretty good, isn't it? An unwelcome and unanticipated experience. Similar language is used in Luke chapter 10, verse 30, in reference to that parable of the Good Samaritan. It describes this man who, quote unquote, fell into the hands of robbers. That was an unanticipated and unwelcomed experience. So what James is saying, it seems sort of ironic, seems sort of odd, really. He's saying that trials are good. Verse 2, consider it pure joy. And doesn't that prompt a big question mark in your mind? But there again, he is speaking to the head. He is saying these trials are a good thing because they have the potential to foster perseverance in your life. So let's just pause for a moment. Let's think about that word. It occurred to me this week, I'm not sure perseverance is a word that's in our vocabulary. And it'd be an interesting exercise to walk across the street to Granbury High School and have some interaction with students and see if they have a good grasp of the meaning of perseverance. Again, I just think it's one of those things that in our language, we don't use that word very frequently. So perhaps some explanation and clarification might actually be helpful. Perseverance suggests the idea of staying power. So in terms of our life in the church, we're here to stay. We have some staying power. We're here to persevere. And in terms of our really important relationships in our life, we're not going anywhere because we have staying power. It suggests the idea of determination under adversity or the ability to stand one's ground. Boys, you very well know, we're not living in a time when it's easy to be a Christian, is it? And so the importance of having the capacity to stand our ground when it's appropriate and fitting. Perseverance suggests the idea of persisting. It's a can-do attitude. Whatever happens, I can. But furthermore, it's also a purifying experience where we're being proven and we're being strengthened in the process. I saw a really good quote this week, and I want to share this quote. This writer said, perseverance means to endure whatever comes without allowing distress or any external circumstances to sway your convictions. Well, I've got a confession to make. And you might make the same confession. Sometimes I really struggle with this whole idea of perseverance. Sometimes I think, forget it. I've had it up to here and I've had enough. I'm not coming to church on Sunday morning. I'm going to play golf. You've been there? You say, I'm not into this perseverance thing. I have some other choices that I'd like to make in place of perseverance. What I'm about to say is going to sound terrible. You're going to think I'm awful. But I think it's true. Sometimes when we choose not to persevere, we become passive-aggressive with God. That's a horrible thing to say, isn't it? The very idea that we are passive-aggressive with God. Well, let me clarify what I'm saying. That's when we get in that mindset, God is unfair. what I am experiencing in life right now, it's unfair. God is unfair. And I don't deserve this. So I'm going to be passive aggressive with God. I'm just going to have a sullen demeanor about me. I think I'll just go in a corner and pout because I really don't appreciate the circumstances in life that I'm facing at the present time. Do you ever get angry? Angry with your circumstances, not being passive aggressive. You're just openly angry. You're just mad. And perhaps you even convey, I'm mad with God because of what I'm facing in my life at the moment. I do believe it's especially hard when those we love are experiencing significant trials. Wouldn't you rather have pain yourself than to watch one of your children have pain? It's really, really hard when somebody we're close to is experiencing those trials and those same feelings surface. God is not fair. I am frustrated. I am angry. So on that very note, I'm going to share a story with you this morning and just a little forewarning. It's not going to be easy to hear. You may even recoil at some of the things that are said. So here we go. Psychologist John Haidt put together a hypothetical exercise. Here's his hypothetical exercise. He says, imagine that you have a child, and for 5 minutes, you're given a script of what will be that child's life. You get an eraser, and you can edit it. You can take out whatever you want. So you read that your child will have a learning disability in elementary school. Reading, which comes easily for some kids, will be especially difficult for yours. In high school, your teen will make a great circle of friends, then one of them will die of cancer. After high school, your child will actually get into the college they wanted to attend, but while they're there, there'll be a car crash and your child will lose a leg and go through a difficult depression. A few years later, your child will get a great job and then in turn lose it as a result of an economic downturn. And your child's going to get married, but then go through the grief of separation. So you get this script for your child's life, and you have 5 minutes to edit it. What would you erase? I just read the script. What would you erase? And if we were being truthful, wouldn't we want to take out all the stuff that would cause that child pain? Well, this psychologist that put together the hypothetical exercise, he continues, and here's what he says. He states, I'm a part of a generation of adults called helicopter parents. Y'all are familiar with helicopter parents. He says, we're called helicopter parents because we're constantly trying to swoop into our children's educational life, their relational life, sports life, etc., to make sure no one is mistreating them. No one is disappointing them. We want them to experience one unobstructed success after another. So Haidt goes on to say, if you could wave a wand, If you could erase every failure, setback, suffering, and pain, are you sure it would be a good idea? Would it cause your child to grow up to be a better, stronger, more generous person? Is it possible that in some way people actually need adversity and setbacks to reach the fullest level of development and growth? Now, he's choosing psychology language. They're going to reach their fullest level of development and growth. That's good old psychological language. I'm not going to use that language. I'm going to use biblical language instead. And so instead of saying they're going to reach their fullest level of development and growth, I would say they are going to be mature and complete, not lacking anything. From James chapter 1, verse 4. God does not provide erasers, nor does God provide helicopters, for a reason, and here's why. His desire is for us to mature. His intent is for us to be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So I'm using this theme for this sermon series, Faith Under Construction. Our faith really is under construction. God is still working on our hearts. God is still working in each of our lives. And that whole process of perseverance has an uncanny way of changing a person. That person has been through the ringer, but on the other end, they have overcome. And when he uses the term mature, he is describing someone who is single-minded in their loyalty and in their devotion to God. He is portraying someone whose faith has been authenticated, someone who has fully developed character, not just any character, but fully developed Christian character. So those are biblical facts. As I said a moment ago, today's sermon is going to speak to the head. Well, that's not entirely true. I'm going to shift gears a little bit because here's what will speak to our hearts. The person who has persevered is now equipped to help another believer who is facing trials of many kinds. Henry Nouwen used the phrase and even wrote a book entitled The Wounded Healer. The Wounded Healer. And here's a quote from that book. Nouwen says, and I quote, "Nobody escapes being wounded. We are all wounded people, whether physically, emotionally, mentally, or spiritually. The main question is not how can we hide our wounds so we don't have to be embarrassed, but how can we use our woundedness in the service of others?" And he concludes by saying, when our wounds cease to be a source of shame and become a source of healing, we have become wounded healers. I don't know about you. That concept speaks very deeply to my heart, because I realize God can use the most difficult things that I have faced in my life to help someone else. And that is really, really powerful. James chapter 1, 2 through 4. As you hear that text this morning, what trials in life have you experienced that uniquely qualifies you to serve someone else in just a great way? So here's the title for today's sermon. You may have noticed it on your handout. Caution, demolition in progress. That sounds a little scary, doesn't it? Caution, demolition in progress. When I grew up in Wisconsin, I grew up with the Azarian brothers. There were five of them. Their father owned a demolition company. They demolished buildings and houses. My dad was a corporate guy, went and sat at a desk. I always thought, how cool would it be to have a dad who demolishes buildings, you know? Wouldn't that be fun? I'm gonna go with my dad to work. We're gonna tear some buildings down today. So the Azarian brothers, who now are running that company since had passed on to the next generation, I actually learned some things about demolition from the Azarian brothers growing up with them. Here's what I learned. It doesn't always go as planned. Oh, and you can't imagine the things that can happen when you're demolishing a building. It doesn't always go as planned. Secondly, it takes a lot more time than you might think when you're gonna knock down, especially a commercial building. And man, is it ever messy. It's as messy as it can be. So, caution, demolition in progress. Be some demolition going on in terms of trials and challenges. And life may not go as planned. It's going to take some time, and I can guarantee you it's really going to be messy. So I'm going to offer an invitation this morning. Go back this week. Read this passage. Read it repeatedly. James chapter 1, 2 through 4. And as you read it, how are you handling the trials you're experiencing? And in what ways is your faith growing? And finally, how can you serve others in a meaningful, unselfish way? Let's sing our invitation song this morning.